Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 25 of Allied Strategies. My name is Tristan. Joining me, as always, are my two excellent co-hosts, Neil.
Hello.
And Ben.
Hello.
So Neil and I are back from GP Seattle Tacoma, which really should just be called GP Tacoma, because it is, it's not in Seattle, it's in Tacoma, and it's not really close. This is actually kind of a thing that they do with a lot of GPs. Like, I think GP New York this year is going to be in New Jersey.
None of them are actually, GP San Francisco would just be GP Oakland.
Yeah, GP Boston was an hour away from Boston. It's, Wizards really likes to get those big name cities, but they don't like to pay for big name city convention centers, is I think what's happening here. Or maybe not Wizards, but the TOs. Anyways, yep. Neil and I had a nice combined record at GP CTAC of 6-6. Nice little 50% win rate. Wait, did we actually have six? No, we had, okay, Neil won four matches and I won zero. So we actually 4-6. 4-6 is our combined record.
Really, we're just eternally watching because we are great sentinels.
I do not understand the reference.
We tap opposing creatures on our opponent's turns.
Ah, I see, because we were 4-6. I get it.
Come on, Tristan.
Really, most of it was me being a Johnny offshoot and Neil being a nice little 4-2 of some variety.
Well, I wish I was a 4-2?
Oh, a 4-3, right. Wait, a 3. A 4-2, right? A 4-3.
4-3.
Should we just restart the podcast? Do you think that would be better than what it currently is?
Let's just all calm down and keep on going with this podcast. It's going to be just fine. My math skills notwithstanding. Neil, would you like to maybe save the podcast with a discussion of a card this week?
Sure. Yeah. About sums up our Seattle trip.
Yeah, it was real bad.
So I would like to talk about Myers Malice, a nice little limited Battle for Zendikar card. 3 and a black, target player, I think. I guess you could discard yourself, maybe. Target player discards 2 cards for, like I said, 3 and a black, and it awakens 3/5 and a black, and it's a sorcery. I think this card is pretty good. It's very good in sealed. Because everyone's playing all these expensive threats and needs all their land drops, and you could just play an expensive mind rot, and it's a pretty reasonable card. But then I've also been pretty happy with this card in draft. Just every time I get Myers Malice'd, I'm just like, but I need both these cards. And then I feel really bad. And then often my opponent also has a 3-3, and I'm like, that card's just not fair. It's just a 3-for-1. And so I recommend putting it on the stack a lot. Either for 4 or 6 mana, and sometimes you can put it on the stack for 4 mana, make them discard 2 cards, and you bring it back somehow with like an Ulamog's Reclaimer, and they're trying to dump their hand, and then you just play another spell instead, and or you just cast 2 of them. When the games you cast 2 of this card, and you just snipe 4 cards, they can just never win, and often the second one gets you a 3-3 because you have 6 mana. But in a resource format, I find that discard is even more powerful. Myers Malice, give it a try.
Which card?
All right, that's my card of the week.
I think one of the reasons Myers Malice is so good in this format is that everyone needs a lot of lands, actually. Like, you can't just discard your 56 lands, or many decks can't anyway.
Correct.
Because they just have invokers or ruin processors or awaken spells or whatever.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I think Myers Malice is a really sweet card.
Also, you can always, there are a couple of very playable bounce cards in this format, and you can always run the old bounce discard combo. Seven mana combo of Clutch of Currents for no awaken, Myers Malice with awaken.
Yeah, that is a nice combo.
Yeah, I've done that a couple times.
Next turn you're just like, I guess I'll play this Halimar Tidecaller.
Yeah, and then you go deep in the tank about which of your excellent and unbeatable cards to pick back up.
Guess I'll just bounce another thing.
Yeah, it's always well, Clutch of Currents at that point in the game.
Have you ever Clutch of Currents to your own Halimar Tidecaller?
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, you can just go infinite. You can make infinite 3/3s.
Yeah, I've never, or I mean, you could just keep putting +3/+1/+1 counters on target land.
Yep, you can go infinite. That's true. Anyways, speaking of things that are not going infinite, my card of the week is Did you like the segue there? My card of the week is in Standard instead of in Limited. Although I did like this card back when it was unlimited. This is Disdainful Stroke, a one and a blue instant from Khans of Tarkir, with a nice promo artwork as well. Highly recommend. And it says, counter target spell with converted mana cost 4 or greater. I think this is pretty well positioned in Standard right now. All of these, everybody's playing like something that's great that gets hit by this, whether it's Tassigar the Golden Fang out of a lot of the slower Jeskai blacklists. Siege Rhinoceros has always been a target of this card. Large Hangerback Walkers out of the Eldrazi decks, or, you know, Ugin. This hits the ramp spells for 4 out of the Eldrazi deck or their ramp targets, which makes it a great card against them. And that deck is gaining in popularity, in my experience at least, on Magic Online. And yeah, I think it's nice because blue is pretty much a free splash in most decks at this point, just based on what colors everything is and how the mana is working out. So the green-white Megamorph deck, for instance, that Brad Nelson played at the most EGP Indianapolis, just had like a Prairie Stream in it and Disdainful Strokes in the sideboard, and that was the blue. And it's great. So would recommend playing this card. I think also Negate is pretty good right now. Kind of off Dispel, because this Eldrazi deck is pretty popular and Dispel is not a card against them if they are playing the newer versions. So, yeah. That's my...
You should have just been like, I think Disdainful Stroke's really good. My source is the last 24 episodes of Allied Strategies. So I think we talk about how great it is, like, every episode.
We definitely don't talk about it every episode. We have definitely talked about it before, though.
It's basically the good guy's Dromoka's Command, you know?
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, Disdainful Stroke is really the hero. It's really just stopping everyone from doing their absurd things. Dromoka's Command is, you know, coming in and crashing our party.
Well, yeah,
that's Allied Strategies in a nutshell.
Yeah.
Wait, sorry. Which Disdainful Stroke?
Ben, you're fired.
What?
This joke is just...
I don't get it.
Which Disdainful Stroke?
Ben, do you have a card to talk about this week?
Ben, do you have a problem?
So, speaking of 4-mana sorceries that do go infinite, my card of the week is Splinter Twin. So I'm going to try talking about something very specific this week. I'm going to talk about what role does the card Splinter Twin play in, like, the blue-red Splinter Twin mirror? Because I've seen a lot of people recently, they sideboard out a lot of their combo in the mirror, and they bring in, like, Keranoses and, like, other, like, bigger spells instead of Splinter Twin. And I think that that is wrong, and I think it is bad, and I'm going to tell you why. So the thing about the straight blue-red Splinter Twin mirror is that they don't actually have that many ways to stop Splinter Twin. Like, most of their, or at least not on Deceiver Exarch, most of their removal is, like, damage-based, but it's Lightning Bolt and Electrolyze, which don't kill Deceiver Exarch unless they have multiples. And, like, the main way that the blue-red deck has of interacting with Deceiver Exarch is casting their own Exarch to tap yours and then untapping and Splinter Twinning you. But that's just, like, if they're boarding out Splinter Twins for Keranoses, that's just not very likely. And also, like, just the biggest reason I don't like Keranoses is it's just a 5-mana sorcery that doesn't even kill you. Doesn't even kill your opponent. So, like, your opponent just, like, you know, maybe they drew Cavern of Souls, so they just slam Keranos, and they think it's game, and then you just go, okay, Deceiver Exarch you, Splinter Twin you, good game. This has happened to me before in, like, big modern events. And it's just... unreasonable. Like, I just don't get why people like a 5-mana sorcery so much in the mirror, because the mirror is, like, all about being very reactive and, like, being able to like, threaten very powerful things like on the end of your opponent's turn, and the best way to do that is with just being able to kill them with Splinter Twin. So also, you can always put Splinter Twin on Snapcaster Mage, and it is great. Splinter Twinning Snapcaster Mage is, like, my favorite thing to do. So that's why I think that you should keep in, like, the vast majority of your Splinter Twins and not board in Keranos in the mirror. Because 5-mana sorceries are just not good in the Splinter Twin mirror, I think.
But 4-mana sorceries.
Well, the 4-mana sorcery at least wins you the game on the spot, you know?
Yeah, if you tap out for Splinter Twin and it works, then they die. But if you tap out for Karinos and it works, you might die. Like, you've gained inevitability, but you are tapped out.
Yeah, the Karinos, like, doesn't even kill them. You know, like you tap out for Karinos and then they tap out for Teferi. Which one of you is probably going to win? It's not Karinos.
How much toughness does Teferi have?
Teferi has 4 toughness.
Just got to find one lightning bolt.
It doesn't, but they can counter it, is the problem.
Yeah. All right, yeah.
It's just, it's really hard to remove Teferi once he's in play.
So what matchups is Karinos good for in the board? Is it for Jund?
Basically everything else.
It's great against Jund, and it's also just a good big spell if you're trying to kill all of their creatures.
So like, what do you...
I don't know, it's fine against, like, Merfolk, one or two copies.
What do you think about, like, does any of this change for different colors of Splinter Twin? Like, you talked about Blue-Red Twin. Do you think this is different for the Twin decks with green or black?
I think it's not different for the ones with green. Karinos is even worse against the ones with green because it's not good against Tarmogoyf. So, like, I mean, it's okay against Tarmogoyf. It teams up with Lightning Bolt or whatever.
Right.
But I think it's much easier plan to just kill them. Against the Grixis Twin decks, like, it depends on how many ways they have to kill Deceiver Exarch, but you can never really know that. So Karinos is likely a lot better against them, just because they have Terminates instead of Lightning Bolts, so it's going to be harder to actually twin them. Also, I think they have fewer Cryptic Commands, so that they have fewer ways to actually counter Karinos anyway. Karinos is, like, pretty hard to counter regardless, but against someone with few Cryptic Commands, he's even harder to counter, so... He's probably fine there. You could probably do either one there. Splinter Twin is a lot worse if they have Terminate. But, like, against straight blue-red, it's just inexcusable, I think. I think Karinos is so bad. And I think, like, I've just seen so many people play it.
All right, this was sweet. Yeah, I like that we talked about this. I think that we can maybe make some sort of segment out of, you know, analyzing which cards come in which matchups in future. Because We'll call it the sideboard, yeah.
It's really an innovative name.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure no Magic content has ever used that name before.
Dude, literally every Magic content uses that name for something.
Yeah, it's going to be great because we're not actually going to call it the sideboard.
Yeah, but
yeah, also
that'll be a nice little placeholder name. All right, so let's move on to our main topic this week. This week's main topic was brought to you by Ben. Ben is, of course... one of the hosts of this podcast, so you can hear him right here, but...
Were you expecting me to, like, say, oh, yeah, hi, I'm Ben. I'm happy to bring you this content.
No, I think he was more saying, like, you know, our sponsor. Like,
exactly, yeah, you know, the whole brought you to you
find,
by.
You can
yeah.
find him at your local grocer in the dairy aisle.
I mean, you also can do that for Ben as well.
Yeah, he really likes pizza, so, you know, dairy's halfway there. You get some bread...
Pizza, you know. Yeah, pizza or burritos. You know, Chipotle at like 11:30. One time I was at Chipotle at 11:30 and I saw Ben sitting there and eating, but I didn't say hi because he had his headphones in and I had my headphones in, and I didn't want to have a social interaction.
That is really embarrassing, and also this must have been earlier than 11:30 because Chipotle, everyone knows Chipotle closes at 10.
No, 11:30 a.m. This was during one of the rare times I was awake at that time in the morning.
Yeah, that does sound true.
I like that you just called it the morning.
Why didn't you come say hi? Jeez.
Because I had my headphones in and you had your headphones in. I couldn't explain this.
He really just wanted the burrito.
Yeah, I was interested in my burrito. You looked very interested in your burrito. You know, I left things at that. Anyways, Ben, what's this exciting topic that you've brought for us this week from Chipotle, maybe?
Or the dairy aisle.
Yeah.
So
a milk-based creation? Does this topic come from cows? Okay, go ahead.
I'm done. Something that
I'm gonna stop interrupting you now.
I don't believe you. You know, Tristan, you could really benefit from this topic. So
I know.
Feel like. So this is something I've spent a lot of time thinking about, and really just sort of the main question is how does one person decide to get better at Magic, or like how do they actually improve at Magic the Gathering? And I've developed a little theory about sort of the efficient way to go, an efficient way to go about it. And I'm going to be, I guess, discussing that theory with my great co-host and my decent co-host.
Sorry, Neil.
So yeah, I think this is very helpful. I think it's very good to sort of think about things like this like meta learning, sort of trying to figure out how to learn efficiently or how to get better, because it's the best way to do those things, right? If you're playing Magic the Gathering competitively, I think you really one important thing to do is really to be in the mindset of like trying to improve. If you want to get better at Magic the Gathering, you have to actively try to do it and care about it, and then that will make you improve much, much faster. If you just sort of play Magic the Gathering, it's a lot harder to get better. And I've probably talked about this before on the podcast. I'm sure people will recall me saying stuff like this. But I guess today I just wanted to talk about sort of, I guess, my general blueprint for learning, or my general strategy for getting better at Magic. So the way I see it, there are basically three phases that I go through when I try to improve at Magic the Gathering. So the first phase is the phase that sort of everybody does, which is just passive learning. So what I mean by passive learning is you just play Magic the Gathering. You just play a bunch, you play Magic, you keep playing some more. You know, maybe you really like Magic, so you read some articles, you watch people play Magic on Twitch, you know, you think about Magic in your spare time, you just go play casual drafts at your local gaming store, you know, whatever. Basically, you just play a lot of Magic. And just in the process of playing Magic, you'll get better at playing Magic, you know? Like, you'll pick up interactions you haven't seen before, you'll get better acquainted with, like, the relative power of draft commons or whatever. So you'll refine your pick order. You know, you'll get better at building sealed decks slowly, or in my case, slowly, or not at all. It's just the sort of thing where if you just keep playing Magic, you'll get better. But you maybe won't get better very quickly, and you're not gonna... It's very easy to plateau in this stage, right? How many people do you know who just play like Magic fairly regularly but don't seem to get any better?
A lot of people like that.
It's, yep. Yeah. Agreed.
Like, I mean, like you just, if you don't direct your like efforts, you're not gonna actually improve in any kind of, you know, any improvement is gonna be purely incidental, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like people will like, you know, start off bad at a format and like get better at the format as time goes on, and then the format will change, and then the same thing will happen over and over again. But somehow they don't get really any better at Magic the Gathering, you know. They just hit a plateau. So that's where I think after that, there's like the second stage. So after you spend a lot of time passive learning, or maybe you don't spend very much time at all, maybe you just... I mean, passive learning is just something that goes on all the time. That's why it's passive. But at some point, if you want to get better, you have to like move past that, and you have to like... You have to do what I call introspection, what is called introspection, I suppose. I didn't come up with that word. And you have to really think about, like, what do you do badly as a Magic player? What do you do well as a Magic player? I'm sure longtime listeners of our show will have heard me talk about how I thought that sideboarding was something that I did really bad as a Magic player once upon a time. And that's something that I, like, took to heart, and I really tried to get a lot better at it. I tried very hard, actually. Now Neil and I have a tradition whenever we play the same deck at a constructed Grand Prix, which is like, I don't know, like the last five in a row or something, because we're very smart. we always have like a little like sideboarding powwow the night before.
I was going to use the word powwow. It's a great word.
Oh, man, it is a great word. Where literally we just talk about sideboarding for probably like 2 hours or something, like distributed over like Friday night and Saturday morning. and we just, you know, if it's a, it's a, when it's a constructed Grand Prix, we just like write down all the major archetypes. We talk about how we want a sideboard, you know, what the game plan is post board and all those sorts of things. And it's impossible to try to do something. I guess I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself, but it's impossible to do something like this if you don't have a good sense of what it is you need to get better at. So like another thing, so right now I think I'm very bad at sealed. Like I had a very long run of not being very good at of missing a lot of sealed Grand Prix day twos. And right now I that is something I think I'm very bad at. And I think that I should improve on it somehow. But this introspection is sort of only possible because I've done all this passive learning and I've played all this magic. And so I can sort of look at my results and look at what I've done and I can sort of identify what it is I need to improve on, what it is I feel weak about.
So there's kind of like a checklist of like, you know, current draft format, current sealed format, standard, modern, vintage, legacy, any other format you might be interested in, team sealed, team draft. Basically just all the formats that you're interested in playing well, you can kind of figure out where you're relatively weaker and focus on that more, basically, right?
Yeah, like those are specific. I mean, it's broader than that, though, right? Those are like specific things that are sort of always there. Like you could, you know, you always need to be thinking about whatever draft format or whatever standard format or whatever. But also there's just tactical things, right? Like how to play from behind, how to play from ahead, like how to play control decks. How to close out a game when you're winning.
How to bluff attack. How to, you know, manage your clock or manage, you know, play quickly under time constraints.
Or maybe how to slow your game down because you're playing too quickly. That was a problem I used to have also, I think. It's actually a problem I still do have sometimes. I play too quickly and I let my gut reaction get... Like sometimes I have an initial guess or an initial gut reaction and then I spend like I feel like it's a hard play, so I decide that I should think about it some more, but then sometimes I find that I just have already decided to do my gut reaction or whatever, and I think that that's really bad and I should really think harder about those sorts of things. But yeah, like playing faster, playing slower, slowing your game down. I don't know, if you're the kind of player who likes to play mind games, then mind games are a thing you could be good at, or a thing you could be bad at and something you want to improve at. You know, like there's no end of possible things that you could be better at, right? It's just a matter of figuring out what those are. And to do that, you really have to think hard. You know, it's not easy to say you're bad at something, especially in a game that you like to think you're good at, you know?
From all of us to you, though, if you think that mind games is something you want to focus on, think a couple more times. It's
probably just the last thing you should worry about.
Yeah, really, they shouldn't be a thing. They rarely have any positive impact on your game.
Yeah, I think one thing that you have to do even before you can do any of this introspection is like accepting the fact that there is always something you can work on, right? Because, I mean, you've heard it again and again. You have to, you know, admit your faults so that you can improve on them. And so many Magic players just are like, oh, man, like, you know, I just got really unlucky here. You know, if I just had gotten luckier, then I would win this game. And there are some times where that is true, where it's just, you know, you just really, you missed your third land drop. You had all three drops in your hand and you couldn't do anything. And it's like, that was really unlucky. But even in that situation, you could look at it and be like, well, was I really unlucky or did I keep a hand that ended up drawing into some three drops and then I missed my third land drop and I should have just mulliganed initially? At least having that thought of like, was there something I could have done is pretty important. And just accepting that there are things that you're going to, you know, be able to improve if you think about them is pretty important.
Just like anytime you're sitting down at a draft, like, it's almost certain that you made a mistake in your 45 draft picks. And anytime you're sitting down at a constructed match, it's almost certain that you don't have the perfect 75. So, you know, even if you had no decisions to make in your match, which I also contest, I think that almost always there was something that you could have done better in the playing of the game. There's also always something you could have done better in terms of getting the right deck in front of you there. So it's never like the responsibility is always on you to have done better, even if that wouldn't have changed your result.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of hidden places to improve, which is pretty tough. And so like that's a really good point, Tristan, about, you know, having a better deck. Because I think one of the biggest edges you can get, especially in like standard these days, is having the best deck for any given day at a tournament. Metagaming has just become even more important in Magic. And being able to beat last week's deck and then having the best tuned version of a deck for any given tournament is so important. And so, you know, if you just show up with the right 65 out of 75 and lose some important matches because of that, you were 10 cards off, but you didn't realize it, then that's a huge place that you can improve on.
Yeah,
I mean these sorts of things are very hard to identify when it's a trend, though, right? Like,
yep.
It's very hard to say. I mean, or rather, I think deck building is like a broad enough category that you can almost always just improve at it if you look to improve at it. But there's going to be diminishing marginal returns, right? Like Brad Nelson obviously could benefit a lot still from getting better at deck building, but he's going to benefit a lot less than, you know, you or I could improve on our deck building just because he's already like so high up there in that like skill department, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like you want to pick the place where you're going to get benefit from your time, right? Because you don't.
Yeah, you want to pick the aspects of your game that like come up a lot, but also you're very bad at, you know, like if you can get the best, if you can get 65 out of 75, I think that's probably pretty good.
Yeah, that's insane.
Like I think you could benefit from a lot different areas of your game if you spend your time better, you know.
It's just like a utility for me, function. Yeah, you want
to
you want to figure
like
out
when we
go ahead. Yeah.
Like, to use my example of sideboarding again, you know, you sideboard twice a match, you know, you sideboard absurdly often. And so it was really important to me to get better at that because it just happened so often and I thought I was so bad at it. Like, I would make my deck, I would sometimes just make my deck worse after sideboard, you know? And I don't think that happens anymore, and I think that, like, it's very good. I have improved as a Magic player because I identified that something I was bad at and fixed it.
Okay, so say you've identified this thing that you want to work on, something you're bad at. What kind of steps do you take to make improvements in that category?
So as long as, I mean, it'll sort of depend from category to category, but I think the best thing you can possibly do is to find someone who's better than you at it and just talk with them or watch them play.
So would this be like the third phase then, Ben?
Yeah. This is focused learning. This is the third phase. Once you've identified something that you're bad at, how do you really try to improve that particular thing? Like you want to make that part of your game better. So you find someone who's good at that and you talk with them. Or, you know, if you can't find someone who's good at that or someone better than you, you can talk with someone who's as good as you, or you can even talk with someone worse than you. Like, no matter what, having someone to talk to is going to be good. Like, just talking about Magic is going to improve your game. I guess you have to assume some lower bound of competence. Like, you can't talk to someone who just learned the game and expect to learn anything, probably.
I mean,
but like
I think that there is something to be said for trying to teach somebody something as well, because, you know, you kind of are forced to re-examine fundamentals when you're talking to somebody who's, you know, understands things less than you.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
So I think that obviously the best bang for your buck though is going to be finding somebody better than you, but I think there are also different things you'll get out of finding people who are your peers or people who are less who are newer, more inexperienced in an area.
Yeah, to continue with my sideboarding example, I don't think that Neil was significantly better at sideboarding than I was. But I think just the mere fact of the two of us talking about it, like we talked about it so much, so many tournaments in a row, that I think both of us have just like vastly improved at it. And I don't think that either of us was like particularly better than the other, but just the act of thinking about it and the act of working on it, like in a focused manner, like really made both of us better, I think. I don't know. Do you think, I imagine you think you're better at sideboarding, right?
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. I probably didn't really think about it that much. It like came up when it came up in game, and I just sort of did what I thought made sense, but I didn't necessarily have a good plan, or I didn't really think about how the matchup's going to play post board. Or one thing that I got a lot better at is like, okay, this is sort of how it looks, but they're trying to counter this by with generally this set of cards, so their deck's going to look different post board. So now what do I do? Right, I never really thought about that before. So there's a lot of things you can start to uncover once you commit to learning it that you wouldn't even realize that you can even learn, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I learned that lesson the hard way against you, actually, Neil, a little more than a year ago when I was playing against your mono blue deck, mono blue devotion, with my blue white control deck. And I like, you know, pulled out my sideboard and I was like, oh, these cards seem good against what he was doing.
You bring like 10 removal spells.
And then just game two starts and you're just like playing, you know, 5-mana Jace and 20 counter spells or something, you know, like that. And you've just, you know, transformed into this deck that now I've made my deck worse against. So, you know, you got a sideboard against their game two deck, not their game one deck, which is really
it happened all the time with when Birthing Pod was legal in Modern. Everyone, a lot of people, because the deck is called Birthing Pod, would bring in like 3 Ancient Grudges against you out of the board. And so more often than not, I end up cutting some Birthing Pods in my deck and just playing, you know, efficient creatures and just winning with Gavinny Township post board. And everyone would just have all these, you know, blank cards to destroy Birthing Pod that didn't do anything against the rest of my deck. So understanding how people think about matchups is very important.
Yeah, it's pretty sick because, like, it's kind of this leveling game where, you know, if you had exact access to your opponent's 60 that they're going to bring, you would bring a different 60, but then they would bring a different 60. So you're trying to be, you know, you need to not just figure out, like, what the optimal strategy is for their deck, but, like, which strategy they're going to be on, if you can figure it out, and then board against that. It's really, like, even to this day, it's something that I struggle with all the time. Yeah. Anyways, we've gotten a little bit sidetracked here. Back to focused learning. Do you have any further like general sweeping thoughts on it, Ben? Or are you about finished with your theory?
I mean, I think finding a buddy to talk with is the best thing you can possibly do. But working on it yourself is fine too, as long as you're really actively working on it. Like whenever you get in a game, you know, you want to approach every game with the mindset of, all right, I'm going to really think about, you know, such and such, like, what's a good example that isn't like an in-game example. So I'm going to really focus on like slowing down my game.
Sequencing,
you know, making sure I don't play too quickly. Yeah. Like that is something that you can think about every single game. And if you think about it every single game, you'll get better at it. You know,
yep.
I guess maybe a better one is like knowing when you have to slow down. A lot of decisions in a game of Magic can be made automatically. A lot of decisions are easy. Some decisions are not. Distinguishing between the two is not always easy. And I've made a lot of decisions too quickly that I should have thought about more. And so that's something that you can really think about every single game, and you can work on it every single game, and you can, you know, if you do that, you'll get better and you'll improve.
Yep. Okay. I think one thing about focused learning that's important too is, you know, we've advocated finding someone better and absorbing as much as you can from them. Maybe it's an article you read from, you know, a pro player, or maybe it's a friend of yours that you think is really good and they're tearing up the, you know, PTQ scene or whatever it is, whoever's better than you. And so you're watching, you're learning from that. Maybe you're talking to your peers and, you know, learning the best you can from all that. I think it can be a little bit overwhelming because you have all these external sources of information and you then need to synthesize that into some useful, you know, actionable advice for yourself that you can put into your games. And that could definitely be tricky. One thing that is dangerous is just say, well, I have all this to learn. I'm just going to, you know, accept what I see, accept what I hear. If you're really just starting out, then just trying to do everything that, you know, better people tell you is probably actually good advice. But if you're, you know, a pretty competent player and you're really just trying to step up your game, it's important to talk to others and then really think about what they're saying and then, you know, make sure it makes sense. Ask them about it. You know, why do you think this certain way? Why do you think the games are going to play out that way? You know, why is this mulligan decision a mistake? Things like that. And then, you know, hopefully the person you're talking to is right, but they might or might not be. And having an open mind about things and then and really making sure and double checking that makes sense. And then incorporating what you learn into useful advice for yourself. You know, one thing that I would say is that one of my strengths, I think, as a limited Magic player is I think I evaluate cards very differently than a lot of people. I won't necessarily just dismiss a card. I'm not going to say it's bad or it's good. You know, I'll have an initial impression, but I will play wacky, crazy cards just because I think, you know, they can have potential in a setting. And if I had just listened to, you know, the pick order list, right? You know, by Frank Carson or whoever, then I'm not going to be as successful for myself. And, you know, one example is when I stream, I do a whole lot more losing because I'm trying out different types of cards and I'm getting all these different inputs from stream or from the chat. And, you know, I find that when I'm doing that, I'm listening to all these different piece of advice, some of which are good, some of which are bad, but because there's so many different channels, if I'm trying to put that all together and also do my own thing, it often just becomes sort of this mishmash of plans and, you know, I'm just going down a road that really doesn't know where it's headed. So pay attention to a bunch of advice and try your best to make sense of it is my advice there.
Yeah, I agree like with a lot of what you said. I think discourse is just the absolute best way that anyone can learn.
Which course, Ben? Which course?
Nice. Discourse. I wasn't even setting that up. That's really impressive. I'm so smart. All right, so basically like I actually think articles are not a great way to learn. Like you can learn from them and they're good to read. They're a good way to sort of immerse yourself in other people's thinking. But I think you lose a lot for not being able to interact with the person who wrote the article. Like you lose a lot if you're just reading someone's opinion without being able to question them about it or without being able to talk to them. Like you can still learn from it, but it's much worse than talking with someone, I think. I think like criticizing someone or them criticizing you or just finding something you disagree on and then arguing about it is it's such a great way to learn. I can't really come up with an example off the top of my head, but just there have been a bunch of times when I've argued with someone about with a friend and sometimes I win and sometimes I lose, but like no matter what, I always learn something. Like I've convinced them and I feel really confident in my position, like more confident than I was before, or they convinced me and I, you know, I've learned something.
That's basically how you came up with your talk today for the card of the week with Splinter Twin, right? Like I'm pretty sure, you know, we were talking about the mirror a while ago and you've also like watched other people and also talked to other people that are convinced that bringing in Keranos is good. And you're like, I don't really think it's good. And here are the reasons why. And they'll be like, well, everyone's doing it. It's gotta be good. And you're like, well, that doesn't make any sense to me. And then you come to some conclusion and you know, now you have an opinion that makes sense to you.
Or you're like pairs drafting with Neil and Neil second picks Sultai Banner in Khans of Tarkir Limited. You're like, Neil, you know, I think maybe you should have taken that Dune Blast. And he's like, no, hang on. Let me show you Sultai Banner. You know, it can make three different colors of mana. It's so good. And it draws a card. It's everything you've ever wanted. And you're just like, I'm not quite sure about that, but let's discuss it.
for our serious listeners right now, I wouldn't do that, of course, but I did really like banners, and I would often pick up a couple Leyden packs and, you know, play all the colors my heart desired and play five drops on turn four. It was a nice format.
Yeah, it was. That was a great example.
Mm-hmm. You can't possibly pass Sultai Banner after you first pick Villainous Wealth.
Yeah.
Let's be real.
Nice combo.
That was another Neil Oliver special back then. That was a great example of a format where Neil was like just on a completely different page than everybody else about what you're supposed to be doing. And
was great.
Got second in a Grand Prix or something with your 18 land, two banners all the way.
That's right.
Yeah, just multiple, just like in the sealed portion and the both drafts, just 18 lands, two banners.
Yeah. Mostly the drafts, but yeah.
Marshall Sutcliffe is doing commentary and is just like, you know, I'm not sure about these banners that he's got going on here. And, you know, you're just killing everybody with them.
Oh, it was really nice. Was sometimes you just figure something out and everyone thinks you're a crazy person. But as long as you can demonstrate that what you're doing is correct and you can understand why it's working, then it doesn't matter what everyone else thinks.
It's like Adrian Sullivan with blue-black control last season.
It's very rare that happens, but I was just like, also just when I built like that Dragons deck, right? I'm just like, you know what I think is really good in Standard right now? Probably just that deck that Flores built 3 months ago. I wonder if that would be good.
Yeah.
Put a bunch of cards together and they were fantastic for Standard. That no one else had really thought of. So, it can happen as long as you're questioning.
Go ahead.
Sorry, no, I'm my throat is actually coughing. I'm not trying to.
Okay. So you just go to GoatBots on Magic Online. You try to sell your Crucible to Spirit Dragons, and they're just not buying any. And you're like, darn. All right, I guess I have to put these in a deck.
Yeah, that's how deck building works.
Yeah. You heard it here first. All right, yeah.
I mean, sometimes you learn something that no one else knows, and you really, really get to exploit it, right? This is sort of what happened. Neil was, like, playing Standard, and he was very unsatisfied with all his decks. He thought that none of his decks were good. And so he was like, all right, I'm just going to sit down and think really hard about what could be a good Standard deck, right? And you're, like, very focused on building a good Standard deck, and that's what you wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
I guess this isn't really you getting better at Magic, but rather you exploiting...
It's more the process, like, right? Of like, this is the problem. I'm going to sit down. Like, these are the constraints. This is what I want to get better at. And, you know, I think this might be a solution because it fits, you know, the puzzle pieces. Let's test this. It's really just the scientific method.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the point is you were very focused on a particular task. And you have to do that if you want to get better at Magic the Gathering. You just absolutely have to say... Like, you have to identify things you want to get better at and then get better at them, like, specifically, you know? Yeah. Otherwise, you're just going to plateau and you're going to be, you know, you're just going to be playing FNMs for, you know, winning FNMs forever, which I guess doesn't sound like bad a place to be, but you could be winning Grand Prix forever, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Cool, yeah. So, to sum it up, passive learning, then introspection, and then focused learning are the three different phases of improving at Magic. So that's PLIFL, or PLIFL is the acronym, because I know that, you know, some of our competitor podcasts are using a lot of acronyms. So PLIFL, it's a new one.
There are other Magic podcasts?
No, they're not. But if there were, I'm sure they would have acronyms as a priority. Anyways, PLIFL, you know.
They probably wouldn't be so smart to name themselves after a Magic card, though.
No, that was really innovative of us to do so. All right, you guys want to, you know, wrap this podcast up here? Perhaps tell a story from Grand Prix Seattle, perhaps?
All right, I'll try to keep my story better than the one I told last time. Oh my god, yeah,
we've had back-to-back Neil stories. This is,
look,
you know, I'm so sorry, Neil, to all the listeners.
Have you considered doing some focused learning on getting better at storytelling?
Oh my god.
Look. Part of the fun is making fun, you know, when you have someone that's just, you know, someone that, you know, that's just really bad at something, but they know they're bad at it and they don't fix it. Then you just get to like make fun of them and you just get to point at things. As long as it's, you know, them not taking showers or something, that's gross. Take your showers. But point.
What?
let's say you have a friend that doesn't take a shower, right? Well, then that's something you have to fix. But I just tell bad stories. It's not something I'm going to fix because you guys get the joy of making fun of me.
I guess my first question is, like, why do you have a friend that doesn't take showers?
This is not – I don't – all my friends take showers, Ben. I was just using an example.
I mean, are you sure?
No, of course I'm not sure, but I can't – I would not point to any one person. And I'm like, you know, I highly suspect this person doesn't take a shower. I don't have any people or any friends that I know that have done that. I really regret opening this can of worms.
Yeah. this has got all the hallmarks of a classic Neil story here.
Yeah, I was
just two minutes into the story and we're zero sentences in.
Really, it's just better than the story itself.
I mean, that's, yeah, a given.
You know, life's about the journey. All right, I'll tell a nice little story here. And it's even on Grand Prix coverage, so everyone can go look it up later if they don't understand the conclusions. So I think it was round four of GP Seattle. I'm playing my nice Rug Delver deck. And my opponent mulligans to six and then thinks for a very long time, decides to keep Scry's bottom, ends up probing, Gitaxian probing me, sees my hand. You know, I show my hand and then he plays a Wasteland and says go. On my turn, like, I play a Delver, he untaps and decides, I guess I'll Wasteland your land. And then he says, go. He just, like, doesn't have any lands in play. And I'm like, well, this is an interesting tactic. And so, you know, I just play some spells and he doesn't do anything and I just win, like, over the next four turns. So, you know, at this point, I'm going deep in the tank because I'm like, you know, what deck plays Probe and Wasteland? And mind you, I'm not very experienced with the format, but I'm just like, it's probably some Delver variant. And, you know, the most popular one is Rug Delver. So it's probably just a mirror match. So I end up boarding in all my cards and, you know, we start game two and I have a land heavy hand, but I have Life from the Loam in it, which is one of the better cards in the matchup because you can just keep recurring Wastelands. And that starts to happen. I actually just start recurring my Wasteland and, you know, removing all my opponent's lands from play slowly. But I also happen to have drawn Submerge, which is a sideboard card that you can cast for free if your opponent has a forest and you have an island that puts target creature on top of its owner's library. My opponent, meanwhile, has played no forest and instead is playing black and is playing a Grixis Delver deck. So I just have this Submerge. It costs 5 mana and I can never cast it for free. So we eventually get to the point where I've brought back Life from the Loam so many times that I have like 6 lands in my hand and I've still Wastelanded my opponent down to 0 lands at this point, and now I'm just starting to play my lands. And on the last turn of the game, I just, you know, I get to my 5 mana and I just cast my Submerge on my opponent's Young Pyromancer when they have no lands in play. And he's just like, he picks up my card, reads it, and he's like, all right, good game. And he just extends the hand. And I'm like, yeah, that was a good sideboard card.
Good old Griptide.
That's right.
Wow, worse than Griptide.
Yeah, costs a lot of mana. I can't believe they printed free spells. Literally every time they print a free spell, it's horribly broken.
A Quarter Shield, man. That card just, you know,
no, like up. A free spell mechanic, you know? Like, Masks had pitch spells and
Alliances.
And these stupid cards, like Submerge and Massacre or whatever. Just every single time.
Cascade a fair mechanic.
Oh,
tell me about Delve.
Really counting that one. Oh, Delve is messed up. Actually, Delve plays really well in Standard.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, Delve is great, but
it's a great broken mechanic that they.
I'm just going to cast Ancestral Recall. A nice little Treasure Cruise.
I'm totally fine with mechanics that are great in Standard, and then just whatever, ban them in the Eternal formats. Fine.
Yeah, I think those formats are banless. Last week when your card of the week was Dig Through Time.
Yep.
God, Dig Through Time is such a great Magic card. I'm so happy they printed it. Thanks for reminding me about that.
You're welcome, buddy. Anyways, that's going to about wrap up this podcast this week. Join us again next week when we'll talk about episode 26. That's going to be the topic next week is episode 26. So be ready.
Until then, Delve Sick. look at 7 and pick 2.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. Oh, that's the ending. Right there.
Please have mercy.
At the end of the intro.
I just want to start the podcast.
Looper.